This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
One down, two to go in the murder trials around the case of Jared Breitigan. Mario Saldana, guilty. Both counts. First degree murder and solicitation to commit a capital felony. The jury took less than 4 hours. So I guess my conjecture the other day about, did they sell it? Yeah, I guess they did. It's interesting in some cases. Sometimes where you think, this may be a little, I don't know, I'm not quite. It's like, boom, there it is. Whoop. There it is. I know. You're like, it's not boom. It's whoop. I know. It will always be whoop. Mario Fernandez was convicted on the prosecution's theory that a web of circumstantial evidence proved he hired Henry Tenen to kill Jared Breitigan. The checks, the trust clause, the phone gaps, his position as the only link between the alleged gunman and Breitigan. The web was enough. No murder weapon recovered, no testimony from the gunman, no recorded conversation where Fernandez asked anyone to commit murder. Fernandez now faces life in prison without the possibility of parole. The prosecution has taken the death penalty off the table before trial with the support of Breitigan's own widow, Kristen, and his family. So there's that. Curious to get your thoughts in the comment section. Substack YouTube links are in the description. 5 days from now, August 31st, jury selection begins for Shanna Gardner in the same courthouse in front of the same judge with the same prosecution team. Gardner is charged with first-degree murder, conspiracy to commit murder, solicitation to commit a capital felony, and child abuse. 4 charges, 2 more than the husband who was just convicted. And we're going to bring it to you every single day. Court audio. So if you want in on this one, hit subscribe. Hit subscribe to the podcast, the link right there on the screen. You can see it. That's a QR code there. Go ahead, scan that with your phone. It'll take you either to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whatever podcast player you want. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi and press subscribe. Then you will have all the podcast, all the audio of the court that you can consume as you go on throughout your day. That's how I've been consuming it. I like you probably, I can't sit in front of TV all day and watch it. So I'm about going around and doing my work. I will listen to it. And this is a great way to consume it. So if you want to keep up on the trial and on the audio, scan the QR code, take you to our podcast channel and do hit subscribe. All of our commentary there as well. So you get full coverage of everything. Check it out. It's free. Her attorney, Shanna Gardner, she got a good one. Jose Baez. He's the one who represented Casey Anthony in 2011 and won an acquittal on every major count in a case built on circumstantial evidence. The evidence against Gardner is stronger than what convicted Fernandez in one critical way. It may also be harder to aim at the charge that matters. So there's kind of a little bit of a trade-off going on here. The jury in Fernandez's trial asked for an itemized list of all the evidence 30 minutes into deliberations. They worked through it methodically for another 3.5 hours, then they came back with guilty on both counts. Gardner faces charges Fernandez didn't. The conspiracy count dropped from Fernandez's case before trial is still alive and well against Gardner. Conspiracy under Florida law requires 2 things, that Gardner intended for the murder to happen and that she agreed with at least one other person to make it happen. Make it happen. Make it happen. He's going to make it happen. Make it happen. A Mariah Carey song from the 90s that was never a huge hit. I wonder if she was singing that while she was making it happen, if she made it happen. Innocent until proven guilty, right? With Fernandez convicted, the prosecution's argument that the agreement existed gets stronger. The man on the other side of the alleged conspiracy was just found guilty of carrying out the plan. Tenen's trial is set for March 27, meaning the alleged gunman still hasn't faced a jury. When Gardner sits down in that courtroom, one co-defendant will be convicted and the other will be awaiting trial. The conviction validated the prosecution's theory that circumstantial evidence can replace the direct proof the solicitation charge normally demands. No jury has to see the text or hear the phone call where Fernandez told Tenen to kill Breitigan. The totality, the financial trial, the phone behavior, the trust clause, the relationship web was enough for 12 jurors to conclude the conversation happened. That matters for Gardner's trial because the prosecution will make the same structural argument. The totality of the circumstantial evidence proves the conspiracy even without direct proof of the specific directive. If that theory convicted the man one step removed from the gunman, it can work against the woman one step further removed if the prosecution can build the chain. But the chain is different. Fernandez was Tenen's landlord. He wrote the checks from his business account. His phone went dark during the hour that mattered. Gardner's connection to Tenen runs through Fernandez. She never wrote Tenen a check. She never lived in the same city as him after the family moved to Washington. Between Gardner and the gunman, there is a convicted man, and that man is the link the prosecution has to bridge. The prosecution's case against Fernandez was missing one thing above all others, evidence that he wanted Breitigan dead. The motive was inferred from the trust clause and the custody arrangement. Nobody in that courtroom ever testified that Fernandez said the actual words. Gardner's case is different. Prosecutors have her texts and messages to her friend Kim Jensen entered into evidence. Gardner wrote, "It gives me such great pleasure imagining slitting his throat." In another exchange, she wrote that she wanted Breitigan gone. In another, she said she would happily watch him get a lethal injection, allegedly. You know, I've said a lot of things and felt a lot of things about exes. Can't say I've ever said those things, even in anger, even, you know, in jest to someone. Some people out there are probably like, I have. If that's you, it's like, And I get it. I do get it. People can say those sort of things and probably far more people say those things, and that's where it ends than actually carry any of that shit out. People say things all the time like, oh, I could kill him. I think you get one step closer when you're like, I'd like to see him die by lethal injection, or I would get, what is it? What was the line exactly here about, it gives me such great pleasure imagining slitting. I mean, wow. Okay, I mean, some people are just a little more expressive than others. Though it gets to the level of a little bit more curious when the person you're speaking of ends up dead. Then it's like, wow, maybe it wasn't just overuse of descriptors. maybe there was a little fuel behind that fire. But again, that's what the prosecution's going to have to prove, that it wasn't just her speaking aloud, frustrations, and yes, they sound horrible, but saying that, nobody's going to go arrest somebody when someone says something like that. It's not a credible threat in the eyes of the law, the way that that was said. Meaning beforehand, if someone saw those texts, they're not going to go arrest her for plotting murder. But after the fact, those very texts are then being used to say, see? Is that that? Or can you argue that Mario Saldana, as some people do, to prove their whatever, love, allegiance to someone, just kind of took matters into his own hands and went the extra distance, went the mile, and took care of this for Shanna, hoping maybe this won't just be a BS relationship out of convenience. Maybe. Maybe she'll love the short, short man. Maybe she'll stop pumping the I Don't Want No Short, Short Man song every time she sees him. Can you imagine being Mario? Every time you get to her car and she's playing that. Anybody who's like lived in the 90s and 80s know that I'm talking about that. What's the song? I Don't Want No Short, Short Man. Whatever that is. I could see that. Gets in the car. Hi, I killed him. Why are you playing the song again? It's very demeaning to me. She's just like nodding away to it. You can see that. That's how it's going to happen in the Lifetime movie. It'll be an understated joke. Jensen's own texts in this go further in July of 2016 in an exchange with another contact named Susan Lee. Jensen said Gardner needed a specific kind of man, the kind that performs permanent disappearing acts on certain people. Again, you don't want no short, short man. Jensen wrote, Lee responded with the word magician and asked if Jensen meant for stupid, the nickname they used for Bridegan. Detective Chris Johns testified in a 2024 hearing that Garner and Jensen used code words, funeral potatoes, and doing magic to discuss a potential murder for hire. Well, there you go. That's what's going to take her down. Johns testified the plot to kill Bridegan went back to 2015, 7 years before Bridegan was killed. Ooh. Johns also testified that multiple people came forward during the investigation to say Gardner had approached them about killing Bridegan. A tattoo shop employee told investigators Gardner said she needed someone to shut Jared up. The prosecution also has court-authorized wiretaps on Gardner's cell phone and her Apple Watch. Baez tried to suppress the wiretap evidence before trial, arguing police lacked the legal basis to capture the conversations. Judge London Kite denied the motion. The recordings will be coming in. The intent evidence against Gardner dwarfs what the prosecution had against Fernandez. But wanting someone dead is not the same charge as directing someone to make it happen. Gardner's jury won't be asked whether she wished Bridegan was gone. They'll be asked whether she made it happen. One witness may carry more weight in Gardner's trial than any documentary recording. Kim Jensen testified outside the jury's presence during Fernandez's trial. She recalled Gardner telling her that Fernandez had eyes everywhere and that there had been missed opportunities regarding Bridegan. The judge blocked most of Jensen's testimony under marital privilege. The statements were communications between Gardner and Fernandez relayed through Jensen, and Florida law protects confidential spousal communications. Again, one of the reasons they got married. If we just get married, they can't go after us for these communications. True. Touche. But they have ways. Gardner's trial flips that. Marital privilege under Florida law protects what spouses say to each other. It does not protect what one spouse says to a friend. Gardner's statements to Jensen, the throat-slitting text, the code words, the solicitations are conversations between two friends, not considered spousal communications. No marital privilege applies. That means the witness that the Fernandez jury never heard could become the prosecution's most important witness against Gardner. Jensen can testify to what Gardner told her directly. The desire to have Bridegan killed. The years of coded conversations. The requests for help finding someone. The only thing the privilege still blocks is what Fernandez privately told Gardner. Gardner's own words spoken to her friend are likely fully admissible. Baez has already previewed his defense in pretrial motions. He accused the state's attorney office of what he called outright foul play. He says the prosecution withheld evidence, that Detective Johns lied under oath during Gardner's bond hearing, and that witness statements were mischaracterized. He filed for sanctions with 12 supporting arguments. He argued that funeral potatoes is a real recipe in the LDS community Gardner belongs to, and that the prosecution intentionally mischaracterized humor between friends as evidence of a murder plot. Some of his pretrial moves landed. Judge Kite ordered certain evidence suppressed going forward. Though she stopped short of finding prosecutorial misconduct, Baez also won a second deposition of Kristen Bridegan, arguing the widow has been coordinating with witnesses, limited it to seven topics, and capped it at 2 hours. The jury pool for Gardner's trial has been doubled to 500 prospective jurors. The case has drawn national coverage. The AP wire ran the conviction under the headline identifying Bridegan as a Microsoft manager killed in a murder for hire. That's what a lot of people have been identifying this case as, the Microsoft guy. The court has now widened the pool specifically to account for publicity contamination from Fernandez's conviction 5 days earlier. Judge Kite had originally considered sealing the Fernandez verdict until both trials were over, but Fernandez's attorney pushed back, and if his client were acquitted, he'd sit in jail through Gardner's entire trial for no reason. Well, that didn't happen. Kite dropped the idea and expanded the pool of jurors instead. Interesting. He'd be willing to sit there in prison for her if he were to be acquitted. Just so, what in effect would happen to her? That's interesting. That says a bit about motivation and allegiance and friendship or something else. Fernandez's conviction changes one thing that may matter more than any one piece of evidence. The man who connected Gardner to the gunman, her husband, just lost everything. He faces life without parole. He has no deal with the prosecution. He has no remaining reason to protect her either. Think about that. Whether Fernandez testifies in Gardner's trial is an open question. He could invoke the Fifth Amendment while his conviction is on appeal, and whether the jury is told that Fernandez was convicted at all is a pretrial ruling Judge Kite hasn't made as of this recording. A co-defendant's conviction isn't automatically admissible against a remaining defendant, but even without his testimony, the prosecution can build on the established chain. Gardner wanted Bridegan dead. The man she was married to arranged it, and Tenen carried it out. The first link in that chain is now a convicted murderer. The question for Gardner's jury is whether wanting it and being married to the man who did it is the same as directing it. Jury selection begins August 31st. 500 prospective jurors, the same courtroom where her husband was convicted 4 days earlier. The prosecution is Gardner's own words. Defense is Jose Baez. 12 new jurors will decide whether a woman's texts, her friend's messages, and her husband's conviction add up to murder, or to a woman who hated her ex-husband and married the wrong man. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Links are in the description. Press subscribe. Check out the QR code there on the screen if you're watching us on YouTube so you can get to our podcast. Press subscribe on the podcast. We're going to have courtroom audio for you of Shanna Gardner's trial every single day as it goes on the podcast platform. So if you want to listen to it, take it with you in the car, where you're working out, whatever, on walks, exercising, that's the best way to do it. The audio of the trial exclusively on the podcast platform. Link is there in the on the screen, or just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi wherever you get podcasts, and you will find us. Hit subscribe. All right. Curious on your thoughts. Where do you think it's going? Now that, like I said, one down, two to go. Will it be all three? Will we get a jackpot here? Or are some going to somehow slip away and get by? We'll continue the conversation in the comments. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Well, holy crap. This case just took a turn. There ain't going to be no Shanna Gardner trial here at the very end of August into September. That was what we were all ready for. Moving to 2027. Why? Oh, my God. We're about to get into this. Follow along, because this case was already very hard to follow, and it just got even more. And it involves Mario Fernandez, the man who just who just was convicted of murder. Her husband, technically, the marriage of convenience. And we'll get into all this because there's a lot of understanding that needs to be done to fully grasp what the hell's going on here today. And I'm going to do my best to kind of make this a catch-all of, okay, you can walk away from this video and really kind of get what's happening here, or at least the potentialities of where this is going. Because we just, like, we thought we were on this road and it just went, whoa! Yeah, it's kind of nuts. One day, and I'd love to get your thoughts in the comment section, Substack, YouTube. Hit subscribe, please, right now. Take the podcast with you, too. Scan the QR code. Take our audio version wherever you go. One day after a Jacksonville jury convicted Mario Fernandez of first-degree murder in the killing of Jared Bradigan, two new felony charges were filed against him, and both involve crimes against children. Yeah. Who, what, where, we're going to, okay, there's a lot to get through, so take a breath, because it took me a moment too, because I just wanted all the information at once. I have done my darndest, as of this moment, to try and gather it up for you. This is an opinion piece, I'm going to say that, but this is everything we've gathered as best we can at this moment in time. Things are ever a-changing, just so you know. Shanna Gunner's murder trial was supposed to begin jury selection as of this recording Monday. So August 31st. That's dead. Judge London Kite granted an unopposed defense continuance, meaning delay in the trial. I know, it sounds weird, but that's what it is. It's a delay in the trial. The trial now moves to May of 2027. So it's like almost half a year away now. The continuance filing gives a window into what Gardner's defense may be building. And they were just handed something on a silver platter, or the timing of this filing, which is a criminal filing, it's not a civil filing, is interesting. It's interesting that these new charges are brought against him right before her trial is supposed to start. What the hell's going on here? Again, maybe a lot of conjecture here because we don't have a lot of answers to a lot of things, but we're going to do our best to try and put the pieces in place and also try to go and say, judging from our view off of this ledge, here's what I'm seeing. And I'd love for your input in the comments. Her attorneys say that because the new charges were filed this week, they need time to investigate the allegations and how they might relate to a motive for Bradigan's murder. The implication is that Fernandez may have had his own reasons to want Bradigan dead, a reason independent of Gardner. Now, whether that theory can survive the prosecution's evidence is the question that now sits at the center of this case. The first charge involves a girl who told investigators the conduct began in April of 2020 when she was about 8 years old. It happened in the bedroom of a Jacksonville home. The charge date range runs from April 2020 through April 21. The child told investigators the conduct went on for many years, but could not identify when it ended. She was interviewed outside Florida on May 6 of 25, about a month before the interview. A family member had asked her about Fernandez during a family vacation, and she initially said no. Investigators later noted allegedly that concerns had risen that the child didn't understand the terminology being used. The matter was then eventually clarified. One detail matters for the defense's theory here. The affidavit does not identify the Jacksonville home as the residence of Gardner and Fernandez that they shared. That's unconfirmed as of this moment. Might it be? It might, but we don't know. Whether Gardner was living under the same roof as the alleged conduct is a question the record does not currently answer, but will, because we're all wondering, who is it? We don't want to identify the kids, but context to try and understand what's going on here is somewhat important, and it might be the kids you're thinking of. I know. Could this get any worse? No. Well, no. The second charge involves a different child, age redacted, who is staying at the home Fernandez shared with Gardner. That home is specifically named in the affidavit. The incident allegedly occurred on March 11th of 22, 3 weeks after Breitigan was killed. The child ended up alone with Fernandez. He came to her room. She locked herself in the bathroom. Gardner was reportedly away delivering cakes when the alleged incident occurred. The child was interviewed on August 24th or 26th, 3 days before the charges were filed. At least one of the charges, one of the cases rather, became charge ready this week. That's how we're understanding it as of right now. Again, very fluid. And because this is a case that involves kids, there's a lot less information available about it. So what does this all mean? What does this all mean for Gardner? ASA Christian Stifler announced the charges during Gardner's pretrial hearing Thursday, citing newly discovered evidence. The Special Victims Unit is overseeing the investigation. Fernandez appeared before a judge Thursday afternoon on the new charges, and his attorney did not object. He's in custody awaiting formal sentencing on the murder conviction, a hearing to set that sentence date is scheduled for October 5th. Arraignment on the new charges is September 17th. These new charges are a different universe from the endangerment count in Fernandez's original murder indictment. Remember this? Because there's already child endangerment charges that are out there on both of these people. They're different now, okay? That charge, filed in March of 23, dropped before trial in 26. It was about Breitigan's 2-year-old daughter Brexley being in the car when he was shot. That's what that endangerment charge was. It wasn't anything to do with these new allegations. Bullets passed within inches of her car seat. That's an endangerment theory that is tied to the actual murder itself. Gardner faces the same endangerment charge, and hers is still live because her trial is still coming up. But the charge on her indictment is the Brexley theory from the original case. It's not related, again, to these new allegations. To understand what the defense is building, let's start with the man Gardner buried. How did we get here? Mario Fernandez Saldana, the man that was just convicted. Let's take a trip down memory lane. They met at CrossFit gym. He was a maintenance staff. They married on Friday the 13th of April 2018, Jesus, in Jacksonville. At first, nobody knew. But later told police they barely knew each other. Both later told police they barely knew each other. They just started dating when Gardner brought him home to Utah to meet her family. Her mother, Shelley Gardner, co-founder of Stampin' Up, the craft supply company, suggested they marry. 3 months before the wedding, Fernandez had been charged with criminal offenses involving a recruit under his command while serving as an Army drill sergeant at Fort Jackson. The charges were dropped. He received an other than honorable discharge. Whether Gardner knew about the Army allegation before she married him is not really publicly established. Gardner told investigators the marriage was about the children. Jared Breitigan would only allow another man involved in the twins' lives if Gardner married him. She called it a marriage of convenience. She hoped it would grow into a relationship. You know, all the right reasons to marry somebody. Let's get married and hope it works. She told a friend it would look better in custody court if she were married again. So again, there was beneficial in ways that were not what one would traditionally think of when getting married. Fernandez told police he married Gardner to help with the kids and with the Jared situation. At trial, the prosecution called the marriage a deal. Let's make a deal. By January 22, they told the twins' school they were separating. Worked out just as planned. Fernandez was supposed to move out during spring break, then Breitigan was killed on February 16th. The move out was delayed. They later claimed to still be together while living in different states, him in Orlando, her in Washington with the twins. They're still legally married. Gardner's defense has indicated it wants to investigate whether Fernandez had his own motives to kill Breitigan, a motive tied to the new charges rather than to Gardner directing him. This is the twist, everybody. This is what's called an independent action theory. Fernandez's jury already determined he participated in the murder. Gardner doesn't need to prove he did it. She needs to prove something narrower and harder, that he acted on his own without her agreement or direction. This is Jose Baez in action. The logic the defense would need runs through the custody dispute. If Fernandez was committing crimes against kids while that dispute was escalating, any family court action could have exposed him. A home study, a welfare check, a guardian ad litem visit, any of those could have brought scrutiny into the home. Killing Bride again would reduce the risk of that scrutiny. That's a personal survival motive independent of anything Gardner wanted. Think of this too. If Jared knew and feared that it would be coming to light that he was doing something, and again, we are not identifying the children here, but let's just play theory. If it is these children, if it is Shanna and Jared's children, if Jared were to find out, or if Jared knew, or Mario feared he would find out and know, and then turn on him, obviously you would do that. And bust him, that would then, well, number one, take away the people that he's doing this to. Number two, he would be in trouble. Number three, it would blow up this relationship that he's hoping will thrive more with Shanna. It's a possible theory. Or is it? It's certainly one that they are going to be investigating. The theory needs a bridge to be admissible in a murder trial, though. Florida courts allow evidence implicating another person when it has direct probative value, not merely to show bad character. For this defense to change the case, the investigation would need to produce something specific, evidence that Bradigan knew or suspected what was happening in the home, and imminent custody action that threatened to bring scrutiny, messages showing Fernandez feared exposure through the family court proceedings, evidence that Fernandez independently selected the target, the method, the timing, without Gardner's involvement. Without that bridge, the argument is Fernandez is accused of other terrible things, so he must have acted alone. That's character evidence, not proof of independent action. Florida courts may not even admit it. The prosecution's answer to the independent motive theory lives in the timeline. Gardner's messages, texts, the prosecution describes as expressing a desire to have Bridegain killed, predate the last child's allegations by 4 to 5 years. Kim Jensen's text to a contact named Susan Lee about finding someone who performs permanent disappearing acts on certain people is from July of 2016. A tattoo shop employee told investigators that Gardner said she needed someone to shut Jared up in 2015. A friend told investigators Gardner said Fernandez could take care of him because of his military background. Fernandez himself told police the twins were better off with Bradigan out of the picture. So there's that. But again, it could just show she has a big mouth and she makes these verbose statements, and she did happen to end up with somebody who would take this sort of action. But was she ever serious about him taking this sort of action, or was it more verbose statements and he saw, this could be mutually beneficial too? Fernandez himself told police the twins were better off with Bradigan out of the picture. If Gardner wanted Bradigan dead years before Fernandez allegedly began committing crimes against children, then her motive existed independently. To some extent, at least. Two people with aligned reasons to want the same man dead is not exoneration. The prosecution will argue it is the definition of conspiracy. The prosecution has also proposed taking Gardner and Tenen back to the grand jury, trying them together in May of 27. That hasn't been decided. A pretrial hearing is set for October 27th. But if granted, Gardner would face the jury sitting alongside an alleged gunman. Unlikely. And even if the defense can establish that Fernandez had a personal motive that doesn't erase Gardner's own conduct, her texts exist, Jensen's texts exist, the financial trial, or trail, I should say, through the texts exist, the defense theory needs to explain all of it away, not just supply Fernandez with his own reasons. A handful of questions remain genuinely unanswered. Where did the first alleged conduct occur? In the home Gardner shared with Fernandez or somewhere else? What did Gardner know about the alleged conduct and when? What did she know about the Army allegation before she married him? Can the defense build a bridge between the new charges and Breitgen's murder? Is there evidence that Breitgen knew that exposure was imminent, that Fernandez planned independently? And underneath all of it, will Baez actually run this theory at trial? Or was the independent motive argument a vehicle for continuance? Jury selection is now May of 27. The prosecution has Gardner's texts, her friend's messages, a convicted murderer's own words to police, and a timeline that puts her motive years ahead of his. The defense's new charges against that could a convicted murderer and a theory that his crimes against children explain the actual killing. The question now for 12 jurors is whether a man's possible personal motive explains a woman out of a conspiracy, or whether it explains why two people's interests aligned towards the same killing. Your thoughts in the comment section. Didn't see this one coming. My God. All right, press subscribe. We're going to be following this closely as, again, moved again. This trial was supposed to start last year, I think, actually. They got moved to this year, and now it's, yeah, my goodness. That's how it works. Be sure to also follow the QR code on the screen if you're watching us, so you can take our podcast with you wherever you're downloading podcasts. We do appreciate that. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, leave us a review and hit subscribe over there. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers Podcast.